I'm going to give is going to be quite different from that of Rav Schechter. It's not going to be specifically halachic. And I know that people have time limitations, so it's going to be shorter as well. But it's going to deal with some fundamental questions about the very nature of Judaism and our interaction with non-observant Jews that will emerge from the discussion. The famous statement of Rus Hamovia, which is the basis of conversion, that she says to her mother-in-law Naomi, Ki amech ami velokayach elokoi, immediately should bring to our attention that conversion to Judaism is not simply an acceptance of religious beliefs. Usually the word religion is associated with a faith community, with believing in certain basic principles. But here, Rus makes a double commitment, a commitment to being part of the Jewish people and the commitment to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and to Judaism as a system of mitzvahs. And we find this replicated in the actual text, or the tekes that's involved when a gerus, when a conversion takes place. If you look in Yeridea, Simen Reish Samaches, the first simen that deals with gerus, in Sif Beis, and I'm just going to quote a few lines, Ksheba lehiskayer, omrim lo, mareisa shebasa lehiskayer, iato yodeya sheyisrael bizman hazeh, dechufim, sechufim, meturafim, v'yisurim boim aleihem. What does this have to do with conversion? If a person accepts Torah and mitzvahs, so why should we be discussing with that individual the status of the Jewish people in the world? And clearly, the answer is that it is relevant, obviously, because that's why you do it. That when the person accepts to be a convert, they have to accept to share the fate, maybe the destiny, we'll get to that later, obviously, of the Jewish people. And that the ger has to understand that they're going to be subject to the same anti-Semitism as the born Jew, and they have to be willing to take on that burden of what it means to be part of the Jewish people in a world that's often hostile. And this is, according to the Shulchan Aruch, something that has to be said to the prospective ger, and the ger has to say, yes, I understand this, and I accept it upon myself. Remember, the ger doesn't have to be told all the mitzvahs, right? Only mitzvahs, kalas, v'chamuras. But this, the ger has to be told. In that vein, I want to remind us of the Rambam in Hilchos Teshuva, Perek Gimel Halacha Yud Aleph, when the Rambam is enumerating those Jews that are excluded from the world to come, even though Kol Yisrael Yesh Lam Chelek L'Olam Haba, but there are some categories of exceptions. So one category is HaPoresh Medarkei HaTzibur. And what is the problem of the Parash Midarkei HaTzibur? The Rambam says that even though he keeps the mitzvahs, he's nivdal mi'adas Yisrael v'lo nichnas b'tzarasam v'ein misanem t'anisa, that he doesn't identify with the Jewish people. He lives in isolated experience, and even if he does so keeping all the mitzvahs, he still has no chelak olam haba, because he doesn't suffer with the Jewish people, he doesn't participate in their experiences, but keeps a religious system in isolation, and that apparently is not what we think Judaism is. It's both. It's participating in a life of Torah and mitzvahs and Jewish proper beliefs, but it's also identifying with and participating in the fate of the Jewish people. This obviously is related to Yetzias Mitzrayim, which we are in the process of the parshos that we're reading. And I thought this would be a good opportunity to give this some kind of context. We have two separate mitzvahs of Zechira. We have more than two, obviously, but two particular ones that I want to bring to our attention. One is Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim. We're obligated to remember that HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out of Egypt, and that is reflected in the Torah in many mitzvahs, which are described by the Torah itself as Zech Yetzias Mitzrayim. Tefillin, Zech Yetzias Mitzrayim. How we express it, there's a whole shtickel Torah in the Rav has in Zecher, Shurim Zecher Avi Marizal, about the mitzvah Zechir Sitzias Mitzrayim, the Zekiyam in Kriyashma, which would seem to follow from the third parsha of Kriyashma, parsha of Tzitzis, relating to the theme of Zechir Sitzias Mitzrayim, but it's fundamental to Judaism. And we also have, even though it's not, doesn't use the word zechira, it's al tishkach, the obligation to remember Maimon Har Sinai separately. And these two are going to reflect the duality that we're going to be discussing, fundamentally based on the Rav's presentation in Kol Dodi Dofeik, which at one time everybody knew, but, you know, time goes on, so sometimes we need to be reminded of things that we used to know very, very well. But before I go to the Rav, I want to spend just a little bit of time on Rav Kook, Zatzal, who comes to the issue of our relation to non-observant Jews, particularly in the context of the building of Eretz Yisrael. I can't talk about the state directly. Rav Kook passed away in 1935. That's obviously 13 years before the state came into existence. But in the building of Eretz Yisrael, Rav Kook's position, which was so controversial in certain rabbinic circles of working with the secular Zionists, was based on a different perspective from that of the Rav's. The conclusion was similar, but the way he got there was very different. Rav Kook, on one hand, discusses the fact, raises the question why the Maimon Har Sinai took place to the entire Jewish people and not given earlier to the Avos. And he answers that in order that Torah be understood as a way of life, the way the world was meant to live, it had to be given to an entire nation. An isolated individual could keep any system of rules as a hermit. It doesn't prove the viability of Torah as the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted the world to be. And therefore it had to be given to an entire nation, to an entire people, that was going to function and conflict and in interaction with other people, and therefore it had to be viable for a whole group of people. So therefore, from that perspective, of course, the essence is the religious way of life, and not sufficient just to be part of the people. However, Rav Kook gave various explanations for why he supported the secular Zionists, often described by the Americas people is they think they're secular, but they're actually religious, they just don't know it, right? And they're carrying out a religious motif. He also spoke about the dual Kedusha that every Jew has, the Kedusha that he's born with, being part of the Jewish people, and the Kedusha that he earns through his life of Torah and Mitzvos. And this is in a letter in response to criticism by the Ritvaz, where he says that a very interesting historical flow, that in the beginning the Kedushas Yisrael that was inherent was dominant, and with the passing of time as we got further and further removed from Sinai, it was more dependent on what we earned and not just the Kedusha that was there from the beginning. But so that would seem to move us not to be satisfied with the secular Jews, but as we get close to the Yemos HaMashiach, the pendulum swings back, and then the Kedushas Yisrael, the intrinsic Kedushas Yisrael, becomes more and more prominent. This is a Kabbalistic notion, which is not my field of expertise. But anyway, Rav Kook somehow justifies the role of the secular Jews, the secular Zionists, in building up Eretz Yisrael, and clearly would be true, and certainly based on the writings of his son, Rav Tzvi Yehuda Kook, as the state came to existence as serving a religious purpose. The Rav brings a different perspective, and that was the title that I chose for the shiur. The Rav in Kol Dodi Dofek, who discusses many things, also discusses two different covenants, two brisim that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had with the Jewish people. And they relate, that's why I started with Zechir, mentioning the two mitzvahs of Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim and Zechiras Ma'am at Har Sinai, to the Yetzias Mitzrayim experience, the Rav called Bris Mitzrayim, or Bris Gorol, and the experience of Ma'am at Har Sinai, the Bris Yud, or in English terms, the covenant of fate and the covenant of destiny. And the Rav pointed out that in the Bris Mitzrayim, it was a covenant with the entire Jewish people who shared a common fate. Right? And this, of course, fits into what I mentioned about the Rambam, that a parish midarchei tzibur loses his share to the world to come, because he tries to remove himself and show no concern for the fate of the Jewish people. And I gave you a quote from one English translation. I feel a little bit guilty, just because they had it available, because SOI had given it out a few years and had a copy immediately available. So just to be equal and be fair, point out that there's a newer translation that was put out by Yeshiva University Press by David Gordon, which everyone should have. I didn't mean to pick the old translation because I thought it was a better translation. I can't tell you that I'm such an expert in translations that I studied the two of them. I can really tell you which one is a better translation anyway, but this one was put out more recently, put out by Yeshiva, the authorized one, so you should be aware of the fact that I happened to copy from the other one. Alright. Now, the Rav points out in discussing what he calls the covenant of faith, that faith, of course, is that which happens to us whether we want it or not. Doesn't reflect our choice. It's our fate. This is what meant to be. It's a right fate in the life of a people, as in the life of an individual, signifies an existence of compulsion. The strange necessity binds the particulars into one whole. The individual against his will is subjected and subjugated to the national fate-laden reality. He cannot evade this reality and becomes assimilated into some other different reality. Remember, this was the Rav's Kol Dodi Dofek, was also a response to how we should react to the Holocaust. And one thing that the Nazis, Yimach Shemam, taught us was that their definition of a Jew did not exclude those who tried to deny their Jewish identity. And no level of assimilation succeeded in removing a Jew from being sent to concentration camps and, Rachman Atzlan, killed by the Nazis. So that it demonstrated as strongly as can be that one could not escape, this was in the negative sense, the fate of being part of the Jewish people as much as one attempted to do so. And even the recent accounts of various prominent people in the United States who discovered that they were Jewish because their parents tried after the war to deny that identity, and how somehow it comes back again, is another reminder that this fate is one that binds all Jews together, even those who try to deny it. Now the Rav points out, and it's interesting that in another formulation, the Rav contrasts the covenant of Avraham Avinu with the covenant of Sinai. So it's not so much people-oriented, but there are very similar notions there of the descendants of Abraham, of Abraham. And as is well known, the Rav's interpretation of Avraham's statement, V'ger v'toshav anochi machem, is that the destiny of the Jew, not just of Avraham Avinu, is to be both a stranger and a citizen of the world at the same time. That we share a commonality with the world in trying to deal with problems of poverty, and, disease, and the general welfare of society. And at the same time, we always retain our unique Jewish identity. It's not my talk for today, so I won't go on it any further. But that notion that the Jew is both part of a broader world and isolated from it is also expressed in the fate of the Jewish people as well in the Bris Mitzrayim, the sense of isolation and of not being fully integrated into the broader world, which the Rav later in the talk criticizes the notion that was so prevalent at one time in the world of secular Zionism, that the emergence of the state of Israel will stop anti-Semitism in the world because we will now be a normal people like everyone else. Clearly the evidence has shown that it's not true. Now, the Rav doesn't see it only as a negative thing. That's our fate, what can we do about it? But sees it reflecting itself in four positive categories, which are, I think, going to be the basis for our relationship, our binding relationship with other Jews who don't share our religious commitments. And I didn't copy the full portions of the Rav, because I didn't want to make the people send out the pages have to have too much. And this way you'll have to buy Kol Dodi Dofek to get the whole thing. So the first, the consciousness of a shared faith manifests itself as a consciousness of shared circumstances. Right? The Jews, because they know that they have a shared faith, realize that we share something in common with Jews who are very different from ourselves. right? Our faith does not distinguish between aristocrats and common folk, rich and poor, a prince and a pauper, a pietist and assimilationist, those who speak Hebrew, those who speak English, those who speak Yiddish, Ladino, whatever language the Jew speaks, whatever status in life, whatever level of religious commitment, it's a shared faith. Right? And this, the image, of course, of Mordechai saying to Esther, don't think that because you're the queen and you're going to somehow, and no one knows you're Jewish, you're going to be saved and removed from the fate of the Jewish people. Secondly, the consciousness of shared historical circumstances results in the experience of shared suffering. Not just suffering, but shared suffering. The feeling of sympathy, in the newer translation they use the word empathy, which may be a better word, is a fundamental feature of the consciousness of the unifying fate of the Jewish people. The suffering of one part of the people affects the people as a whole. The scattered and dispersed people mourn together and are comforted together. Tefillah, prayer, tzaaka, the human outcry, and nechama, comfort, are all formulated in the plural, right? Hamakim yinachem eskem misok shavdei tzim v'yushalayim. We won't hear what you should say eskem to an individual or scha or sach, but certainly it's b'shar cholei, b'shar avelei Yisrael v'yushalayim. Similarly, refuah, when we add Nishman Esrei, a request for refuah for an individual, and we put the name, it's again together b'shar cholei Yisrael. It's never only the individual, it's only always in conjunction with the Jewish people. Right? That is our experience, and that is very much of our consciousness. We identify with the suffering of the Jews anywhere else. In fact, if anything, we perhaps suffer a little bit from only uniting in response to suffering. The response in the last few weeks in Israel and throughout the world, the unity that's been expressed by the Jewish people in support of the recent war that Israel fought has been remarkable. And I know there are isolated Jews who didn't join, but overwhelming sense of unity. I have some involvement in the, because being a president of a Jewish organization of the Zionists, I get to be a member of the Conference of Presidents of Major Jewish Organizations. And as you all know, all Jewish organizations are major, and they all go on forever. But at the meetings that we've held, the sense of unity that existed, that exists, in response to a real struggle, to need, is so different from the breakdown that it exists at all other times, right? And this is involves Orthodox, conservative, reform, secular, right-wing, left-wing, name a category, and they're part of it, except for the Haredim who chose not to join, but they could have if they wanted to. And when it comes to need, when it's a crisis, everybody works together. That's the Jewish experience. Now, the Rav, interestingly enough, connects this, and this is in the context of Bris Mitzrayim, not Bris Sinai, to Kiddush Hashem and Chilul Hashem. Because the Kiddush Hashem relates itself to the principle of shared responsibility and liability. Right? That which I do reflects on the Jewish people. And therefore, if I behave in a manner that enhances HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name, I create a Kiddush Hashem. Because it's not just that I did something good or you did something good, it reflects on the Jewish people. And the reverse. When a Jew does something, is guilty of something terrible, it reflects on the Jewish people, of course, Zichur Hashem. Of course, we'll say it's unfair, and why do they pick on, why don't they mention it when it's a non-Jew? And it's a good question, but it's part of our belief that it's a Chil Hashem. We believe it's a Chil Hashem and a Kiddush Hashem that the actions of the individual Jews do reflect on the Jewish people as well. And finally, fourth, the shared historical circumstances give rise to shared activity. The obligation to give charity, perform deeds of loving kindness, derives its force from your penetrating or encompassing experience of brotherhood. Torah often refers to achicha rather than reyach. Every Jew is my brother. No matter who he is, who she is, my brother and my sister, the sense of family. I had the interesting opportunity last week to be on a panel in this Jewish television station called Shalom TV, which they say is available in 20 million homes. Someone who gets it, please tell me. I haven't found anyone yet. Okay. We're down to 19,999,999 haven't gotten it. But apparently it is available. It is available, and there were other people who go on the panel regularly, so they must think that people watch it. They wouldn't go on for nothing. And the moderator asked us the last question, because we were supposedly experts on the American election and effect on Jews, on the Israeli election and what have you. Why I'm supposed to be an expert is a good question, but they did ask me to participate. Asked us to contrast our feelings to Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, and Abraham Lincoln. And the answer was, which one do we see as family? Right? And of course, all the panelists said, you know, that they feel very proud about being Americans, and they identify with many of the qualities of the great figures in American history, but that family is Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. We're family. The famous truva of the Rambam to Rav Avadya HaGer, where he explains, he tells the Ger that you're family too, right? Despite the fact that, you know, from a biological point of view, you're not. But you can say, okay, Avraham, okay, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, like everyone else. And Ger, maybe Bikari Bikurim, the Rambam Paskins, because the Ger is the spiritual descendant of Avraham. You're also family, right? So that's clear that all of us see that the Jews are family. There's a certain bond that one has with family, even when one disagrees with members of one's family. You know, the only relationship that is a Brit Yehud rather than a Brit Gorol is marriage. We pick our wives, and our wives pick out their husbands. But we didn't pick our parents, and we don't pick our siblings. They just are. That's our fate. That's a Brit Gorah, right? That's a relation that we have automatically. And it is clear that the Jewish people have a remarkable history of Maasei Chesed. Unusual amount of it, which is works very much, you know, in time of need, the Jewish community comes through, and the broad Jewish community comes through to help other Jews. We may be getting a problem in some of the people in the younger generation, where their sense of peoplehood is minimal, and they see their Jewishness in different terms, but let's see what happens when they grow up and get families, you know, and hopefully they'll come back to this notion. These elements all exist as part of the Brit Goral, and this evidence binds us with other Jews, and certainly with respect to the land of the state of Israel, it binds us very clearly with a Jewish state. All right, then you think of the elements that we described. the common sense of fate. When Israel's in danger, the Jew around the world knows automatically that the Jew everywhere else is in danger. Right? We suffer when a Qassam missile lands in Sderot or in Ashkelon. We all share a sense of suffering. We also feel bound to the Jews in Israel, and we do have a sense of responsibility to be supportive and helpful to them. Interestingly, the flip side of this is a growing awareness. I'm not referring to only in religious circles, but in secular Israeli circles. The most recent Prime Minister, Olmert, certainly a secular Jew, started something in terms of increased concern about Israel-diaspora relationships. The last two presidents of Israel in different ways wanted to set up some kind of a structure where the Jewish leaders in Israel and in the diaspora would interact, some kind of conflict. There's a growing awareness of that Israel has a responsibility and concern for the welfare of Jews throughout the world, and not only to tell them to come to Israel, but for them at where they are as they are. That there is a growing sense of the bond of the Jewish peoplehood, which is being expressed by the Israeli leadership as well as Jews in America understanding this common fate. But of course, as the Rav points out, this is only the first level. This is the Bris Mitzrayim. This is not the higher level, the ultimate level of what he called the covenant of destiny with Maamad Har Sinai, in which the Jews said Naaseh V'Nishma. They made a voluntary commitment, and we'll discuss at some other point the issue of Kofim HaChagigas in the Gemara and how the Rav explains it. Other Mefarshim explain it, what element of compulsion was involved there, but fundamentally the Jews accepted the destiny of the people. Destiny in the life of a people, as in the life of an individual, signifies the deliberate and conscious existence that the people has chosen out of its own free will, which it finds the full realization of its historical being. Remember, if fate is thrust upon us, it's not something that we've chosen, so it's sort of, in a sense, what we're stuck with. No matter all the positive elements in it, no, it's what we are. What can we do? Destiny means a goal that we strive to achieve. It's a commitment in our part. It reflects our bechira chafshis. And therefore, in that sense, is a much higher notion. What is the great quality of humankind? In which, in certain respects, we're higher than the angels, is we have bechira. The angels, no matter how spiritually elevated they are what they are. They don't choose to be angels. They just are angels. We choose. We have paths in front of us. At every moment we're making a choice. That's the greatness of human beings. What is the content of the covenant of Sinai? It consists in a special way of life, the Jewish way of life, Torah and Mitzvot, which directs man's existence towards attaining a single goal, a goal beyond the reach of the man of faith, namely man's imitation of his Creator through an act of self-transcendence. Right? The Rav, as those of you who read it, much of the material of the Rav, the few of you in the room in my generation who was zeichet to actually hear the Rav directly, knows that the Rav sees the ability of human beings being creative created in Torah as the ultimate expression of our imitating a Kadosh Baruch Hu. That we have the ability to make choices, create, and if we make the right choices, that's the ultimate fulfillment of our destiny as Jews. And the Rav interestingly shifts here, and this is on the last page that I gave you, the Am Chesed, the people of loving kindness, was raised on high and became a Goy Kadosh. Between Am and Goy is interesting, but Chesed to Kadosh, a holy nation. Holiness, which expresses itself in the form of an authentic mode of being, is the very foundation of the shared destiny of the nation. Right? Interestingly, even though the Rav said you can cause a Kiddush and a Chilul Hashem as an individual, but Kedusha is something that you earn. Right? Kedusha is ultimately that which comes from how we live. It's an authentic mode of being. By the way, I should point out that the Rav doesn't totally disagree with Rav Kook in his piece, the well-known piece on Korach, where Korach says, "V'amech kulam kedoshim," aren't all the Jews holy? So in the Rav's explanation of the mistake of Korach, the Rav says, yes, there is an inherent kedusha that all the Jews have, but that's just the bottom level of kedusha. There's also the level of kedusha that one earns, and then we're not all equal. Some of us earn a much higher level of kedusha than others, and it's not simply, it is true, Amech Kulam Kedoshim, but that's not the goal. It's not the ultimate manifestation of kedusha that we strive to achieve. Now, later in this work, the Rav talks about his vision of the state of Israel and whether it is to be seen just as a haven for Jews, a fulfillment basically of the Brit Goral, a place where the Jews are protected and much safer and have their own sovereignty and jurisdiction, or it's going to be a manifestation of the Brit Yehud, of Jewish destiny, of it's going to have a spiritual, uniquely Jewish character. And clearly, the secular Jewish world will not reach the highest level of the fulfillment of the Brit Yehud, of creating a holy and religious state that fulfills the vision of Jewish destiny. But the Rav does not dismiss that on some level there can be a spiritual manifestation. Israel, you know, we often struggle with the fact that Israel gets criticized for things that everybody else seems to do without any problem whatsoever. There's no war crimes to see how many civilians the Americans killed in Iraq and how many Georgians were killed by the Russians in Georgia and Chechnya. No one even thinks about it. And it's clearly unfair, no doubt about it. But on a certain level, we demand from ourselves, and even the secular Israeli army demands from itself, a higher notion, a notion that being a Jew makes certain spiritual demands. Who could you imagine any other army calling everybody up and saying, "We're going to bomb your house, please leave," right? Knowing that that means that the terrorists could also leave, right? And reduces the effectiveness in doing so in order to protect individuals. That very Jewish notion, and I don't want to get into the debate whether they're right or wrong in the overall picture, but that's a very clear manifestation of a very Jewish sense of spirituality that does not come only from religious elements in the country. It comes from everyone as well. There is some manifestation of the sense of a unique Jewish responsibility and destiny, that even those Jews, I'm getting a little back to Rav Kook, who see themselves as secular, in general seem to have absorbed and internalized. I know that I'm a little bit past my time, even though I can justify it by starting late. So I'm going to wrap up. So just give me 1 minute to put it all together. What I tried to discuss with you today is the role, one aspect, the critical aspect of the role of Yetzias Mitzrayim in contrast to that of Maamar Har Sinai, places in establishing a Brit covenant, the covenant of faith that binds us in so many ways with all of the Jewish people, those who differ from us in our religious practices, in our economic status, in where we live, in the languages we speak. We're still bound together by this Brit Goral, which comes, emerges from Yetziat Mitzrayim, the emergence of the Jewish nation, and that this is an intrinsic component of what we describe as Judaism, which is not the same as a religion as understood by other religions. It has this national component, going back, as I started with the statement of Rut, Ki'amech Ami V'Elokayach Elokoi, while at the same time, it's the first level and not the final one, not our destination. It reflects our fate and not our destiny, which emerges from the Brit Yud, the covenant of Sinai, which is what we strive for, which is that which we express, not only because of the fate thrust upon us, but because we choose to share in this destiny, and we commit ourselves to be both an Am HaChesed and a Goy Kadosh. Thank you.
Shalom, Rabbi Blau. We'll see you again next week.